This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
I'm Wong Xiaoning and this is The Breakfast Grill. Capital markets in 2020 were volatile and confusing as the world was facing an unprecedented economic crisis last seen during the Great Depression of the 1920s. But yet, certain asset classes reach all-time highs. But what will 2021 bring, and has all the easy money been made? Questions I asked the panel this morning, Mr. Teng Chee Wai, Managing Director of Affin Hwang Investment Management, and Anand Padmakanan, Head of Equity Research at Maybank Kim Eng in Malaysia. Now, thank you for joining us, gentlemen. So for a change, Malaysia was the best performing large ASEAN market, registering a return of 5.7% for 2020. The question is, can we hang on to this title for this year? Are you positive or negative? Because so far, it's been a very shaky start to a new year. We are down actually 1.5% FBM KLCI versus every other regional market, which is up. Teng, let's start with you.
Good morning, listeners. Happy New Year. I think if you look at the KLCI for 2020, I think what you need to look at is just beyond the positive numbers that you've seen. I think a fair bit of the gains have been made from a certain specific sector, especially glove in Malaysia, given the weights that increased over the years, over 2020. My sense as we move into 2021, I think globally, there seems to be an appetite continue to take on risks in terms of portfolios. However, for Malaysia, I think our setback at now move on from just pure economics to politics. I think that needs time to fix, that needs time to sort out. And I think meanwhile, while that's been sorted out, I think the market for Malaysia in particular may just consolidate or probably drift downwards for time being.
So, Anand, do you share his view? I know four trading days is not a trend, but why is our market in correction mode? I mean, things say it's politics. Is it more than that?
Yeah, I think when you look at the underpinnings for equity market performance in 2021, if you put aside the politics, you know, the underpinnings on the macro side, on the earnings side, are actually very positive. You know, you're still seeing a very stimulative environment in terms of both fiscal policy and monetary policy. This is not just Malaysia, this is globally, and that's very good for asset prices. At the same time, the earnings narrative has changed dramatically. You know, we're firmly into the return to normalcy trade now. Investors are really jumping onto that bandwagon. And certainly on our numbers, on GDP growth projections for this year, everything's very positive.
Yeah, your house view is 5.1%, right, for 2021?
Correct. We are a little bit below the official forecast because we're a little concerned about the political impact on the economy, of the political instability, as well as the risk of more lockdowns, which I think is crystallizing as we speak. So that's why we are a little bit behind. But overall, if we put aside politics again, Malaysia should be performing pretty well this year, not just because of the stimulus, not just because of earnings recovery, but we also have the weaker US dollar. And for equities in particular, we should see some asset reallocation out of fixed income into equities, because the fixed income outlook this year, after two very good years, you know, interest rates coming down, a lot of foreign support for the fixed income market, this year it does look a lot more challenging. You have a lot more supply, but weaker demand from the banks and pension funds.
So, Teng, do you share Anand's optimism? Do you think 2021 is going to be a better year than 2020? I mean, last year, let's face it, it was cheap money flooding the system, right? I mean, interest rates all-time low. It paid to take on risk, and that kind of drove markets upwards. Is that going to be the scenario this year, or are we going to have to refocus back on corporate earnings?
I think eventually markets have to focus on some fundamental factors, and I think earnings is probably one good start to it. And if you actually look at the numbers that's coming in, I think optimistically, I think the numbers should be strong. And we also are having a low base to compare with in 2020. So it's not a rocket scientist to expect some level of rebound. It's probably, we're going to see normalization in economic activities, hopefully by the second half of the year. But as we move into 2021, at the early start of it, there seems to be some possibility of lockdowns given what is happening around the world with COVID-19. Although, I must say, the market is not responding negatively to it. I think markets continue to respond positively to liquidity, positively to possible further fiscal stimulus from US, and those type of news. So my view is that, yes, 2021 may see a continuation of what happened in the second half of last year. But just bear in mind, markets have done very well. The easy money has been made. just be mindful of some of these downside risks to the marketplace.
And since you brought up downside risk, where do you think the downside risk is? Is it going to be broad across the market, or is it going to be sector driven? Or specific stock driven, almost?
I think the markets at the moment is very consensus in view. I think that to me is a downside risk. If you talk to most strategists out there, everyone, most of them would probably make a projection that dollar will be weak this year, risk assets should do well, generally in the first half of the year. Second half of the year, let's see how things pan out. So to me, that's the risk. The risk is that everyone is just so upbeat about a recovery. And each time when I think about when the consensus are just so united in their view, to me, then I ask myself, then where are the blind sides to the marketplace?
So this is for you, Anand, because you're part of that consensus view. You're part of the sell side. And, you know, do you all think you all are all just crowding in the same narrow band and expecting positive markets? Because I think if I look at the earnings, everyone's roughly there in terms of the year-end target, all about 1790, 1830, which is your own target.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what is kind of giving you that positive view? I mean, are you just being too optimistic?
Yeah, I think, you know, consensus trades, as pointed out by Chiu Ai, they're always a risky thing because everyone's in the same boat. And if something goes wrong, everyone rushes for their exit.
It's the lemmings, right?
Correct.
Literally.
Yeah, they all fall off the cliff at some point if things go wrong. And, you know, there are definitely risks. I mean, our bullish view on the markets is predicated on what we see now in terms of the recovery outlook, in terms of liquidity. Liquidity is very important. And, you know, in terms of those tailwinds I mentioned, the weaker US dollar, asset reallocation. But, you know, there's some clear risks. Potential for lockdowns definitely would affect our earnings outlook, and also GDP growth recovery. But there's also a lot of, I would say, political risk in terms of policy. You know, when we were going into budget 2021, we were filled with dread. You know, we felt the government was going to levy a lot of taxes and levies on the corporate sector.
Especially the windfall tax on clothes,
correct.
Right, for
it was
example.
A big concern. Also, corporate social responsibility on the GLCs like Tanaga Telecom, which we saw in the early parts of the lockdown last year, didn't happen. It doesn't mean it can't come back this year, because we all know, as per the Fitch rating downgrade, that the revenue picture for the government is extremely challenged. And if you look at balance sheets in Malaysia, the household balance sheet is stretched. The government balance sheet is stretched. The only recourse, if you want to raise fiscal revenues, is the corporate balance sheet, which are still in pretty good shape. So that's always a risk for earnings, in our view. So that's something we think could be a setback for us this year.
And if we look specifically at corporate earnings, right, what kind of earnings growth are you expecting in 2021? I mean, that's really going to be the key driver to the FVM KLCI, aside from the macro issues, right?
Okay, so the numbers are pretty punchy. We are expecting a minus 11% contraction for 2020.
But that's a given.
Yeah, yeah. And then a 45% earnings recovery in 2021. Very punchy. Now, a lot of that is gloves. We still think the gloves will double their earnings this year because the, you know, whatever the sentiment is on gloves, the ASP picture and the order backlog is still very real. So that's a big driver of that 45%. If you took the gloves away, it'd be about 32%. Still chunky.
Very chunky.
Yeah. So one or two other drivers. Financial sector, we think, will do a lot better this year in terms of earnings as margins stabilize and provisioning comes off. And the other drivers are the loss-making sectors, which are quite large. Aviation, you know, airports, casino, which were loss-making in 2020 in a big way, should see their losses narrow quite dramatically this year as well. That will help the number.
Now, gentlemen, I want to go back to this risk, which you highlighted, especially you think at the very beginning, which is the political risk. Now, how do you, you know, factor that into the market? Because let's face it, right? You know, the politics has been dominating our headlines. And the last thing fund managers like is uncertainty, especially foreign fund managers. Now, I think you talk to them very often, you know them well. They don't like this kind of thing. And we can see it in terms of the foreign shareholding in Malaysia, all-time low, or very close to all-time low, below 21%. I think the all-time low was 20.3% in 2009. So, I mean, how can we reverse this? Or is this something that we're just going to have to deal with?
I think it's something that we have to live with, actually. And I think from a foreigner perspective, whenever we have political uncertainty, they tend to avoid those markets. But actually, if you look at the ringgit as a parameter, it's not all that bad, actually. Ringgit has appreciated against the dollar, and that's also partly in trend with a dollar weakness globally. So I don't think the foreigners are that focused on the political environment, partly because I don't think they are that participative in our local markets. I think it's more the locals, the punters, when they look at the political environment. The politically sensitive stocks came under a lot of pressure I think 2 days ago. And I think generally you have seen also sell-off by portfolio managers because with political uncertainties come policies implementation. And we need to have, given the impact of COVID-19, we need policy implementations fast to counter the negative effect on this economy. So I think generally, I think most local managers will be sidelined by this political development.
Do you know what kind of a weighting fund managers some of your peers are having? Are they overweight or underweight Malaysia generally?
I think if you move around, most people in the from the foreign side, I think the weights have been negative. I think they're underweight Malaysia. Generally, that's been the trend for a while. So I think.
And why aren't we compelling then? I mean, why aren't they looking at our market?
I think it's also a function of size and liquidity. Given how the other markets in Asia has developed, especially China, India, you find that Malaysian market will continue to be marginalized because as the weight in the index, we are getting smaller. And that's only natural. If you imagine you have a weight of 40% of the index and another country with a weight of 2%, which one will you focus on? Because which one will have a carry bigger impact on your performance? But I think that's not all of it, because domestically, the domestic liquidity has grown significantly over the years. And if you look at other markets like Indonesia, Thailand, and some of these other markets, the domestic liquidity is a very important factor. Even in the China A-share market, foreigners play a very small role in influencing those markets. And I think for Malaysia, we will move towards that direction. And because of the trapped liquidity in Malaysia, the local investors, whether they're retail or institution, will then dictate the direction of the market.
On the Breakfast Grill this morning is both divides of the investment community, the buy and sell side, with Teng Chee Wai, Managing Director at Affin Hwang Investment Management, and Anand Padmakandan, Head of Equity Research at Maybank Kim Eng. Up next, how can you make money from markets? BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to The Breakfast Grill, where in the hot seats this morning is Teng Chee Wai, Managing Director of Affin Hwang Investment Management, and Anand Padmakandan, who is the Regional Head of Equity Research at Maybank Kim Eng. Just before the break, we were discussing how the KLCI might do in 2021, and perhaps what could be the risks that derail this. Now, in the meantime, I think in recent days, the cases of COVID-19 have risen, and there is this vaccine optimism that we keep hearing about and which has actually helped global markets. But Anand, do you think we are placing too much hope in this? I mean, are we out of the woods? And, you know, it will probably take some time for us to achieve any form of herd immunity. So like you mentioned earlier, GDP growth for Maybank, 5.1%. Is that actually perhaps too optimistic?
Yeah, well, the government projections are, I think, 6.5 to 7.5%. So we are significantly below government expectations for GDP growth this year. And, you know, the vaccine rollout reaching herd immunity is a big part of that. And realistically, given vaccine availability and distribution realities, we don't expect herd immunity for most of ASEAN, including Malaysia, until the end of this year, until the fourth quarter.
But markets seem to be pricing that in already, right?
Absolutely. I mean, some trades to us are a bit strange. You know, this huge sell-off in glove stocks because of this expectation that everyone will be vaccinated very quickly and things will get
back
to normal.
Yes, and we've seen this rotation into some cyclicals. I mean, like some of the tourism names, some recovery even in aviation and hospitality, for example. And not just Malaysia, but globally. Are we being a little bit too forward-looking?
Yeah, I think so. At least as a house, we think the whole border reopening trade in particular is a little bit overly bullish. We're not fans of aviation or airports at the moment, because even if there is a herd immunity, we have no idea how travel will evolve over the next, into the future. Because what if you can't travel if you don't have a vaccine? And many people have said they don't want to take the vaccine. So how are airlines going to cope with that? So it's much easier to expect domestic travel to recover. Yeah, and that's a big part of our tourism industry, so that's good. But for international travel and the stocks exposed to international tourism and international people flows, we are much less optimistic.
Okay, Teng, he has basically told us what not to buy, but I'm going to ask you now, how are we going to make money from markets this year? I mean, is this a year of stock picking? buying value or growth, or is it just focusing on big caps? I mean, what's the investment strategy at Affin Hwang?
I think it's going to be very, very sector and stock specific, because some segments have actually done very well and the valuations are pushing itself. For instance, the external, the exporters for in Malaysia, they are trading at about 40, 50 times multiple, and that's not cheap. And I can't see how, as far as multiple expansion, we can see further multiple expansion from where they are trading today. Then again, on the point about discovery of ideas, I think one have to bear in mind that because of large liquidity in the marketplace, any shift in views will be quickly reflected. Just like when in the month of December, when there's a view that the recovery place should be where one should deploy money. We've seen how bank stocks in Malaysia just move up rapidly. Mm. And within a period of 3 weeks, whatever values that you like to look at is all gone. And I think that's something investors have to bear in mind. And because of the large liquidity that's available globally, trades that are opportunities gets closed up very fast. And that's something that you have to adjust to. And it's not easy to spot some of these ideas, but it gets closed up extremely fast. Where we are putting our money, yes, we are back into some of the recovery trade, in terms of the portfolios, whether it's in the banks, and the likes of it. That's where we have, put some of our investment into. We generally, try to avoid, things that, that are very sensitive to, the current political environment. So that if it's very dependent on contracts and the likes of it, there seems to be a fair bit of shift in terms of whether it's on or it's off at the moment. The other area that we continue to have a debate internally is on the glove sector, whether that's something that we think that the pullback that we've seen provides an opportunity, or that's something that signals the end of the sector.
Well, I'm going to stay on the point of gloves because Maybank, they are expecting earnings growth on the glove sector 120% for next year, right? Is that achievable, Anand? We do see average selling prices increase. We do see capacity improving, but our analysts, as usual, just being eagerly overly optimistic or overly pessimistic. This time, of course, veering towards being super pessimistic. Super optimistic, you ask me.
Yeah, well, let's put that in context. I mean, 120% sounds like a lot, but in 2020, the growth was 450%.
That makes it even harder to imagine, right? Because you're already coming from such a high base. It's not like a low base effect.
Yeah. Well, based on our conversations with the glove guys, I mean, we're still seeing ASPs trending up. We're still seeing a backlog of 12 to 15 months in terms of orders. And, you know, this back to normalcy trade, I mean, ignore some key fundamentals, right? I mean, these vaccines that are coming out, from my knowledge, I'm not an expert, but they don't prevent you from getting COVID-19. They reduce the symptoms. If they don't prevent you from getting COVID-19, why would there be a big pullback in glove usage and glove utilization globally?
But would you say that the froth, or at least the catalyst that drove glove share price performance in the last, what do you say, 10 months has been on exactly this, right? It's not necessarily driven completely by science or fact. It's just that there was scarcity of growth stocks and gloves was one of them. And it was clearly a winner in this COVID-19 pandemic.
Yeah, so 2 points in that. I mean, one concern now, we're all talking about downside risk. How do you hedge against downside risk from disappointments on the back to recovery trade or the vaccine rollout? The glove stocks are very obviously that hedge, you know, the exact opposite of last year where they were, you know, benefiting from the whole pandemic. And the other thing is, I think we ignore the fact that when you look at the glove stocks, they are making so much money now. They are sitting on billions of dollars of free cash flow. The only stock in the Bursa that has more net cash than the glove stocks is actually Petronas Chemicals. And they build billion-dollar refineries. The glove stocks spend a couple of hundred million every year on glove lines. So we have tons of money to return to shareholders. So we see the glove stocks not just being a growth stock anymore, which is what they've been for the last decade or so, but evolving into yield stocks. And we have seen those signs from stocks like Top Glove, which are doing share buybacks and special dividends. We would expect the others to follow suit as well.
And besides that, Anand, what are your big buy sector calls? Or should we look at things more from a thematic basis if we want to make money from markets?
Yeah, so we still like the exporters. I think they are expensive, but I think a lot of local money will hide in the exporters because one important fundamental is they are not impacted by domestic political issues. Yeah, a lot of the value stocks we have in our picks, like banks, utilities, GLCs, they are very driven by domestic political ups and downs. But exporters don't care. They've catered to the global market and they just do their thing. So tech gloves still feature very highly in our picks. But we also have a lot of value stocks. So as GY mentioned, financials, we think good value. And if they get their dividend upside back this year, if Bank Negara is not as stringent on their on caps and dividends, they become very good yield stocks as well.
So what are your top five stock buys for Malaysian market?
Oh, you have the list in front of you. So
I know, but I need you to say it. What are the top five stocks would you put your money in that provide the most upside?
Yeah, so definitely the banks, we do see value in stuff like RHB. I also like Allianz on the insurance side. I think that's a nice, solid company with a good yield. On the gloves, we would stick to Hartelega. That's as the sort of the poster child for the sector. It's a bit more expensive, but I think in terms of ESG issues and sustainability concerns and controversy, it's quite a way better than the alternatives in the sector. I think you should have some consumer stocks in there as well. Consumer stocks have been very battered last year. So this year we have things like Aeon, Padini in our portfolio. Also something like RCE Capital, which lends to civil servants who consume. They have done very well. We think they'll continue to do very well. So that's the kind of flavor. And of course, healthcare like IHH, we think if you're looking at a border reopening trade, medical tourism coming back would be very good for a stock like IHH, which is a market heavyweight.
And Ting, I have a question for you because you're the fund manager in the house, right? And that's about alternate asset classes, because I think we all have observed the rise and rise and rise of Bitcoin to above $40,000. Is this something you would consider as part of your core portfolio today?
Not really. I think it's a bit difficult to deploy into Bitcoin. I think that's something that digital assets, something that a lot of the younger generation investors are looking out for. And I must say I'm from the very old school, and I can't even put what value, how do you value a Bitcoin other than really pure demand, supply equation and sentiments that drive the price. There's no doubt there's a lot of other usage of Bitcoins as an alternative asset class, but for us as a, mainly exposed to the public space, we define alternative investments as PE, as direct property investments, and the likes of it. Not so much in the digital space, but that's something that we will try to develop as a house going forward.
And you know, gentlemen, do you see a lot of interesting corporate exercises or listings that might bring some excitement to the Malaysian capital market? Because last year, I think there were only 30 IPOs, and perhaps the largest of that being Mr. DIY. And Anand, you're in an investment bank. What kind of deal pipeline do you see?
Yeah, definitely it should be quite a robust deal pipeline. I mean, you have interest rates at all-time lows. You know, if you're a good credit, you can borrow very cheaply right now. So if you're looking at thematics for the market, M&A actually should be quite active this year. And some of our picks are actually predicated on M&A activity. So asset-heavy sectors like property, plantations, a lot of those stocks are trading well below replacement or book value. So we would think they'd be good targets for bigger players. So in plantation stocks like Bowstead, SOP, one of the big reasons we have them in our picks is because of that M&A thematic.
And Ting, last question, 30 seconds. We all know, or we have heard of Afin Huang, probably going for listing very, very soon. Are you going to be part of that deal pipeline?
As usual, no comments from me on those matters.
On that note, thank you, gentlemen, for giving us your expectation of how equity markets will perform in 2021. Joining me on The Breakfast Grill this morning was Ting Chee Wai, Managing Director at Afin Huang Investment Management, and Anand Padmakaran, Regional Head of Equity Research at Maybank Kim Eng. I'm Wong Shaoning, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile. Unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.